You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Underground Railroad Game is a new play currently at Ars Nova on West 54th Street, running until November 11th. It's based on an actual middle school game that Scott Shepherd took part in as a fifth grader. And now he and Jennifer Kidwell have created and perform in this funny and devastating theatrical version. The New York Times' Ben Brantley described it as a lacerating comedy on race and an in all ways sensational play. And I'm very pleased to welcome Scott Shepherd and Jennifer Kidwell to our show now to talk about it. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Thanks for having us.
Scott, can you describe the game as it was played in fifth grade?
Yeah, so I grew up in South Central Pennsylvania in a little town called Hanover, not far from Gettysburg. So there's a lot of reenactment culture and romanticism around the Civil War. And in fifth grade, we played a Civil War kind of reenactment game where we were split into Union and Confederate soldiers. And then one of the games among the many we played was kind of ferrying around these black dolls to different classrooms where there were different safe houses. And the Union soldiers could accrue points, and the Confederate soldiers had to kind of capture the dolls.
Was it possible to rewrite history every year?
It was an interesting moment when the Confederate side would win, yeah.
But what did you think of the game when you were participating in it?
When I was in fifth grade, we just thought it was a really delightful, fun game. We were in fifth grade and we, you know, we're playing this live action role playing game. It was fun. We didn't really think twice about the larger meaning or the repercussions.
Did you have any black classmates?
You know, we had one or two black classmates, but that was about it. It was a very it was a very white school.
Jennifer, how did Scott first describe the game to you?
We were hanging out, and he told the story that he had played the game to me and a couple of our close friends. And I mean, it was like really late. You know, we'd just been hanging out, and I was like, "You did what?" I was laughing, and I was like totally shocked. Like,
but how soon after that did you come up with the idea of actually creating a show about it?
Well, it's a longer story, but we had been assigned to work together at school. We went to Pig Iron School for advanced performance training, and we had gotten a dance assignment we weren't able to complete. And while we were trying to make it up and it wasn't failing miserably, Scott had the better idea that we should try to make a piece out of this moment.
At this time, Scott, you had kind of rethought the game?
Yeah, of course, yeah. So it became this provocation, right, to think about the ways in which we learned history, the ways in which we talk about history, and we kind of used it as a jumping-off place to explore different things.
As a black woman and a white man, how do you deal on a professional level with all the painful misunderstandings, dark subliminal feelings, and historical baggage that you are so eloquently dealing with in the show?
We articulate it and put it in the show.
That's it. Every time something comes up,
Actually,
so many direct quotes from people in this world.
So many.
In 2015 and 16 that are just placed right into the show.
References to things that we have seen.
Jennifer, weren't you involved in a controversy for playing a black artist, Danelle Wolford,
in a
Whitney Biennial game some years back?
Yeah, most of the
controversy sounds like it should have gone into the show.
Well, you know, some of the research does. Definitely this question about, like, agency and consent. I think the way that piece is framed often is that I was hired to do something, and I'm actually, you know, I'm an artist. I make work, so that's my work that I made. Whether or not it's controversial, it's my performance, that's my body.
Well, you could have been hired to play a killer, a serial killer, and nobody would have said anything about it. That's what actors do.
That is what actors do. But, I mean, beyond being
But when race
an actor,
comes into the question, it becomes different?
Well, I think the real question with that piece is one of authorship, right? Like, that I was performing, but the big question to me is who gets to say who made the piece? And performers are often relegated to, well, you're just being inserted into somebody else's vision. And that wasn't the case for that piece, but that was something that was quite egregiously overlooked.
Scott, you must have been aware of all the risks when you started developing this piece.
Yeah, absolutely. one of the big questions we ask in the piece is, was it worth it? The things we show on stage, the things we claim, the dark places we go to, do they kind of merit the truths or the revelations that the piece tries to deliver? And that's an unanswered question. That's something we kind of pose to the audience, and it's something we kind of pose to ourselves each night. You know, is this worth it?
Yeah. It's funny that one night some parents from Hanover Middle School came, and I was like, oh, whoa, this could get pretty crazy. And early
on— Where did
you
go to school, by the way?
For my, like, elementary school and stuff. I went to a public school in Baltimore called Roland Park, and then I went to a school called The Park School in Brooklynville. That's a progressive, literally—
But Maryland, a state that's had its own issues.
Yes.
We both
continues
lived on
to have
either
them.
Side of the Mason-Dixon line. Pretty close.
Right. But yeah, these Hanover Middle School parents came, and early on in the piece, before things had gotten hectic, they said, "This is too much. This is too far." And I
really?
Just looked, and I was like, "Oh, honey, if you think this is too far, you should maybe you should leave."
Did you start with a simple idea before it developed all these layers and twists and turns?
Yeah, absolutely. We started with the framework of the school and these two teachers. And then we launched into this romance and these two people who are falling in love. And we're kind of chronicling this love by using different American tropes. So we dive into a romantic comedy framework, and then we end up kind of going into a darker BDSM scene. So we're kind of traveling through all these different ways of framing the relationship.
Yeah, so, and the inspiration is like the way we romanticize like antebellum life. Or romanticize history, you know, like the haze of a vintage photograph, the lack of color, the way that those things allow us, like, even if we know how painful things might have been or how difficult things might have been, there's a way that we kind of fetishize that.
So that you play teacher Caroline and teacher Stuart. I assume neither of you have actually been teachers, but you really do sound like middle school teachers.
Oh, no, we've been teachers.
Yeah.
You have been teachers?
Mm-hmm. Both of us.
Yeah, I taught English at Friends Central School for a while, and
I've taught mostly adults. And I taught here in New York.
And when did you decide to make the audience participate?
Well, we went to see this lecture at the National Portrait Gallery in Philly. A gentleman, a park ranger, I guess, / historian, was giving a talk about the Underground Railroad and was having a very difficult time describing the enslaved people. He kept, you know, stopping himself, the black Afro-colored people in bondage, and every time he stopped himself, and we thought, how crazy to give a talk about the Underground Railroad and not be able to speak about the debatable protagonist of the story. And so it was that feeling, that humor that we found in that situation that fueled this.
When people in power don't actually have the knowledge to speak about what they're supposed to be, in charge of.
Is the play about language and race?
Very much. Yeah. Very much about language and about race, but I think language is a way that we have of articulating things or as a means that's like an insufficient means of articulating things. Mm-hmm.
Is this in part a play about the rules of language? Who can say what and in what context?
Absolutely. Who can say, but also who can... Like what humor and like pleasure means to different people with different articulations, and who can have access to that.
And who has permission to speak.
Who has permission to respond to.
Scott, did you hesitate as a white man to tackle this? Did you need a collaborator?
I was very excited to tackle this. I thought it was a really rich moment that happened to me, and that I needed to kind of unearth it and figure out what it meant to me on a personal level. And that's what the collaboration allowed us to do, is really encounter it from a personal point of view.
Jennifer, you've said that you object to the word slave. In fact, you didn't use it in all of the ways you described being enslaved in a little thing you said a few minutes ago.
Yeah, I had this experience of working for a weekend on an octoroon in Philly, and realized, like, oh, the way that system is framed, to call somebody a slave is different from saying an enslaved person. And, I had to check in with myself, like, actually, that's more accurate. And I think offers more personhood and agency to people. And
well,
clear.
We've seen this with the word, the N-word, who has the right to say it. And it doesn't even change when it's in quotes. I once read a quote where I read the word because it was there. It was a historical quote. And some listeners complained.
We deal with that word a lot in this piece.
It's certainly very loaded. Yeah. And with good reason, right?
My guests are Jennifer Kidwell and Scott Shepherd. Their play, Underground Railroad Game, is currently at Ars Nova on West 54th Street, and it's running until November 11th. You start with a scene that's a trope of popular depiction of the Underground Railroad.
Yeah. It's very clearly, I would call it if Steven Spielberg directed Roots and, you know, swallowed it.
What does it get wrong?
Well, those kinds of depictions make me wonder what we're after, right? Why, if we're supposed to recognize brutality, then why is the framing so hazy and romantic? So it's confusing, right? Like, I want to understand that, you know, this is a person who's desperate, on the run, and like, you know, at the end, like on the edge of a cliff. Not that, you know, the Underground Railroad is like jaunting through a meadow of flowers, and at the end there's like a white person waiting with their arms open in Ohio.
We have to be very careful when we talk about the Underground Railroad, because it can often be this way for people to tell heroic and uplifting stories about the past, and by doing that you end up eclipsing the horrors of the past. And so even as we're telling these you know, romantic stories, we have to be very careful that what we're not doing is we're being proportional as far as how many people were actually affected by the Underground Railroad and how many people are affected by slavery. Oftentimes we tend towards the narratives that allow us to feel better about ourselves.
To mediate, like, the immediate feelings of, like, guilt, horror, desertion, like, all of this negativity gets mediated by the saturation. But then how do we reckon with what has happened, and how do we stop it? So all of this brutality that's, like, continuously happened in this country on black bodies, of course it's still happening. Because when we look at the past, it's, you know, our heart explodes with joy and wonder.
We often can't talk about some of these things reasonably as adults. Is it fair to note that teaching slavery and the Civil War and the Underground Railroad to fifth graders is doomed to fail on some level?
It's a funny thing. I think about this, but I'm not really sure. And, you know, I'm like, look, I have a niece and nephew, and I look at them and I'm like, so when do we start doing real talk? But at the same time, there were certainly children their age who were living within the system, on all sides of the system, you know? So if you can live through it, then why can't we talk about it?
Both of you also do nude scenes in this. Is the sense of the value or whatever of the body of a person of one race different than of another, and of course male and female?
Boy, the piece poses that question. I don't think I want to give it an answer right here.
Well, you want the audience to make a lot of decisions.
Yeah.
Does the play change with the composition of the audience? Do the laughs come in different places?
Yeah, but sometimes it's traceable, and sometimes it's absolutely not. There was one night this gentleman came. I don't even know this man's name. I don't know if I'm telling the story, but this guy came one night, and I swear he laughed at all of my favorite jokes, all of the little jokes that people often overlook. I was like, oh man, we have a real kinship. And then, you know, some nights people don't find my jokes funny at all.
Yeah, we definitely use humor to kind of create an air in the room, and then if we're doing a good job, oftentimes we'll kind of suck that air back out of the room, and people don't know when they're allowed to stop laughing, when they can start laughing. And for us, that's really where a lot of the work is happening, when people have to interrogate their own instincts and their own impulses and say, wait, why am I laughing at this? Wait, why is that guy laughing
at
this?
Yeah, you know? It creates an awareness not only of yourself and your point of view in the room, but then you start interrogating, like, other people and who they are and what their level or lack of awareness is in the room. Not to mention our who we are and our level of awareness.
And then some people are afraid to laugh, but you're also making them uncomfortable. So there's that line that has to be crossed.
Mm-hmm.
Is it different when there's a mixed race audience?
Yeah, I mean, you know, New York theater scene has a lot of work to do in order to mix the audiences, I think. But
now, as I understand it, the play has changed in many areas over the course of its development. Are you going to continue to work on it and change it, or do you think it's finished now?
It's closer to being finished than it ever has before. I mean, it's one of those plays that really changes every night because we there's no fourth wall in a lot of different places, and in other places the fourth wall is very porous. So we are actively engaging with the audience, and they can determine what kind of show it is. As far as making big changes, probably no.
Probably not big changes. We're laughing because I have an impulse to change constantly. And
you mentioned earlier that the relationship between the teachers then becomes a love affair, and that leads to all sorts of other things where there's a conversation they have walking home from the movies. It's a little hostile, even in its flirtatiousness.
Competitive.
Is that what we're afraid, that there are subliminal things that lurk beneath any racially connected relationship?
Or maybe that just to divest that of like its racialization, to say that what if there's a thin line between hostility and flirtation, mm-hmm. between anyone? But if it then becomes politicized, does it make it even more dangerous?
Well, right now, there's a lot of people are talking about being opposed to political correctness. That is part of the same conversation. You also, the conversation in the play seems to almost be about hipster racism, where people are saying, I'm not racist, so my honesty is endearing and even provocative.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. That was a very important fuel yeah. for that scene. This, you know, I'm just kidding, and I can kid because I know exactly why what I said was wrong.
Yeah, and in a lot of ways, humor and political correctness can be used in certain cases to deflect or to avoid or to obfuscate these actual problems and these actual issues that people are afraid of facing in a real vulnerable and honest way.
Now, the production is scheduled to run until November 11th. Mm-hmm. Does Ars Nova have something else coming in after that?
Yeah, Ars Nova always has something going
on. So this is it?
Yeah.
Despite the great reviews?
Well, we're hoping that the piece lives on after this run. We're kind of gathering information about tours. But as far as the Ars Nova... this particular run, it's going to have to end on November 11th, yeah.
On West 54th Street at Ars Nova's Theater. Mm-hmm. My great thanks to the two of you for being on our show, Scott Shepherd and Jennifer Kidwell. The play is called Underground Railroad Game.
Thank you so
Thank
much.
Thank you so much. What a pleasure.
Yeah.